Yes. Okay. So today is what is today? November 23rd, 2011. This is the follow-up interview with Bev Phillips. And as you can see, I'm futzing with the sound. I'm Troy Reeves from the UW Mass and Oral History Program. And Bev, so we can get a sound level here, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Beverly Phillips. P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S.
Okay. So, seems to be doing fine. All right, so my first question is, you talked a little bit about, at the end of the first interview, about the challenge of when you came back as library director, particularly the challenge of trying to get the material out through some type of online catalog.
Right, and after we met, I was remembering more of the details, which is how these things go. So when I first came back, we had a situation where nothing had been added to the card catalog for a couple of years, although we were creating shelfless cards and computer tapes. So the first change I made was to start cataloging all new materials through OCLC. Even though we were still, at that point, we didn't have an online catalog. So I was just getting card sets and having them filed into the card catalog. But what that meant was that we had tapes that were in correct machine-readable format that's standard for libraries that we could use when an online catalog came, and it was clear by this point that that was going to be coming relatively soon. And then I took those computer tapes from the 2 years when we hadn't been generating cards at all and basically created a book catalog. There had been printouts, but they were sort of in not very usable after a couple of years to have printouts every few months, and you had to go through lots of them. So I created a book catalog with basically index volumes on authors, titles, and subjects, and then the entries that listed the call numbers. So that's what we did for a while there.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. So my first question for this, that isn't a follow-up from the last interview, is if you would talk. So you were library director, it appears from your resume, for 11 years, 85 to 96. So,
right.
So
yeah.
A pretty decent stretch of time.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could start by an overview of that time and focus on first what you would see as your successes during that time period.
Well, it was a time when, you know, the staffing level was reduced, but, excuse me, but we were still able to continue the acquisitions program, I think, really successfully. Several things actually happened during that time. The first, first I could say that even earlier there had been one point at which the Land Tenure Center Library was on the verge of merging with the General Library System. We were kind of working out an agreement with the director of the General Library System, Joe Trays, and then he left, and it's kind of all fell through. So that actually preceded this NAL online catalog thing. But one thing that happened during that period is that we had integrated quite a few functions with Steenbach, in that they handled our all the circulation for our materials. When we came up with online circulation, we participated in barcoding all of the materials in our library, and they handled course reserves, which made our materials available for longer hours because we were not open very long hours as a small shop. So that was an initial really obviously useful for the patrons, but also extremely, you know, it was good in terms of building the relationship, and the relationship between those of us at LTC and Steenbach was quite good. We worked together on a lot of things. one of the next things that happened during that period, I was pretty active in the special libraries group on campus, which at that time there wasn't, before there was an online catalog that allowed more integration of holdings, those libraries that were not part of the general library system were kind of out there on their own, because we didn't have any, besides just telling people we existed, there was no way to share materials. So we, that group was active, and in addition to doing kind of, I guess you'd say, continuing education for people working in those libraries, we were also really active in, there was a study, I believe it was called Hayes Hill, that was looking at gender equity in salaries and also titles for academic staff. So one thing that I felt very good about was we were able to create a special title, a title series for special librarians, which was called Special Librarian. It sounds like no big deal, but the librarians in the general library system had the title Academic Librarian. And the reason that we really wanted to have the additional series was because the criteria our supervisors used for judging our work was quite a bit different than what you would find in the larger academic library setting. So we did that, and I thought that was quite worthwhile. Another, I thought, major thing that came a little later, but that I was, that was certainly a big deal, was doing retrospective conversion of the library records so that we would be able to have a complete online catalog when that came along. This started with, we at the Land Tenure Center Library joined a national project around 1991-92. It was organized by, the acronym for the organization is SALAM, S-A-L-A-L, I can't remember all the, I have to look it up, but it's the Seminar for the Acquisition of Latin American Library Materials, and in honor of the 500th anniversary of Columbus coming to the New World, there was a big project to create online records for materials dealing with Latin America. And it was a few libraries with strong Latin America collections, and we were invited to join that project. So we hired extra staff, and we did RetroCon, retrospective conversion, for all of the records in our catalog that dealt with either Latin America or kind of developing countries in general. So that was a major project. And at this point, we were doing interlibrary loan, again, through the Steenbach system. So they were doing our interlibrary loan, and we saw a pretty big spike in demand for our materials because about half of what we had was unique in OCLC. I mean, we had a lot of unique materials. After that, when the funding was gone, I, and this one I really did do myself, but for a couple of years I took catalog records home for the shelf list and basically did retrospective conversion from the Africa, Asia, and there were some things on Eastern Europe and North America, so I did RetroCon on all of those myself. I typed the things in at home while I was watching TV or whatever, and then ran batch processes the next day to complete the conversion of the catalog. And as part of that, I did a lot of weeding, obviously. I eliminated materials that were outdated and didn't really need to be part of the collection anymore.
Thank you. Can you speak a bit more about retrospective conversion? I know you just talked about it, but sort of
for
more
people
of the,
that don't know what it means.
Right.
Basically, online catalogs work by having an individual computer record for each item that has different fields, which are standardized, that say this is the author, this is the title, these are the subjects, this is when it was published, everything that you previously would have seen in an old-fashioned catalog card. And so what retrospective conversion meant in my case anyway was taking the sort of master card that describes each book and then inputting the information from the card format into the standardized MARC or machine-readable cataloging format. So a lot of tagging fields and little codes and things like that. Of course, for a large project like that, you also run across problems in the collection and discrepancies and things that are not standardized that you also sort of clean up at the same time. I would say when I did this, the size of the collection, I was trying to remember, but I think it was about 25,000 books, that is different titles that we kept on bookshelves in the Library of Congress classification system, and about 25,000 smaller items that were kept in the locally developed system in filing cabinets. And we did both of those. And then we also had journals, and so the information about the journals we owned as well.
Okay. So you were able to do, were you able to do some of that retrospective conversion through this Salaam project?
Right. We did about half.
Okay.
We covered Latin America and the general things, which was maybe more like 60% of the collection that way. The library focused on developing countries, although as I said, in the last few years, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, we added some Eastern European and former Soviet bloc countries. And then for the last few years, we had a small amount of materials about the United States, primarily things like Native American land rights and things like that.
Okay. And I may ask some follow-ups about some more of these successes, but
sure.
There's always a flip side to successes, mm-hmm. and you can ask it however you want. You can ask it by challenges or failures, but I think, so upon reflection over this decade or so, were there things that you would tag as either a challenge that didn't get met or a failure?
Well, I think the biggest problem was always the funding, because Land Tenure Center was primarily funded by grants from USAID. And as the grants and cooperative agreements and different kinds of arrangements, but that's where most of the money was coming from. As the federal policy changed, one thing that meant was more of the funding was tied to particular projects rather than being just for research that was more general. And so that was always a challenge, whereas it could be interesting and all that to be involved in project work. The library still had a brief that was to cover subject areas for the whole world, or at least all developing countries, and so it was always a challenge to put that together. It was also an obvious problem that we were not able to integrate this subject area into the university better in terms of either joining the general library system, joining Steinbach, keeping it separate, however it might have happened. So being short-staffed is nothing that was limited to us. I mean, it was a general problem, but I would say those were the two major disappointments.
Okay. So my next question is, management issues, you specifically being a director, and you may, you're going to answer this however you want, but the other way maybe to look at it is the issues or the challenges or the interesting things about managing what it was basically, I guess, a one-person shop. So however you want to tackle that, but basically the overall question is your management of the library during that time period.
Okay. During that time period, most of that time we had student employees, student hourly workers, who did a variety of more routine things like shelving and, you know, typing or keyboarding, depending on the year. We had a half-time library technical assistant and who handled a lot of, particularly the things like checking in paper journals, sending out orders for new books, correspondence, kind of secretarial duties, and then we usually had, setting the any project aside, like about a half-time person who was a graduate student, sometimes in a development-related field and sometimes in library science, who helped out with indexing and subject cataloging for journals and new materials. So that was kind of the basic setup. During this time, although frankly I don't remember exactly when, we did manage to get a chunk of money as a base budget for purchasing materials. It wasn't just us, actually. This is something that several of the special libraries got from the state budget, kind of working with the campus libraries, general library system. So that was a big help. We transferred at some point to having the people in the general library system doing the actual payment and orders for paid books, but we had an extensive system of both asking for things for free, because we could often get materials free if we just knew to ask for them, and publication exchanges with research institutions and universities in developing countries, where we would send them Land Tenure Center's publications in exchange for theirs. And those, we all always did those in-house. They weren't done through the library system.
Okay. This leads to a question I hadn't thought of asking. So from what I know about the library system, there are bibliographers that sort of scour the globe to find material to bring into the general library system. What was the setup at the Land Tenure Center Library to try to ferret out these materials and then get them?
Right. I mean, that was a big activity, and I think it's both gathering those materials and then getting them cataloged so they would be available to people is really what that library was all about. Had a variety of approaches. We had a combination of some things we would deal with book dealers in developing countries sometimes. They would send us their lists of available items. We got a lot, and obviously for the published things you can get on the lists of publishers that publish in your subject area. But we actually did a lot of scouring of both acquisitions lists from other libraries in that had usually a geographic focus. Our focus wasn't geographic. But for instance, if I would look through the new books lists from a German institute that specialized in African studies, and several things like that. So I would look through acquisitions lists from libraries that had an overlap with our subject area, I would look through print bibliographies, especially those from CABE, the World Agricultural Economics and Rural Sociology Abstracts and Rural Development Abstracts. Those were the main sort of standard abstracting services that were relevant. We got a lot of gifts that were just people who traveled, either affiliated with Land Tenure Center, the faculty would bring things to us, or they would bring contacts, say, you should contact these people, they're publishing in our area. And then they would bring things that they had picked up in their travels. And we did have, like any library would, our own policies of what we would go after, what we would accept if it was a gift, and you know, what we would then pass on either to the, usually to the area studies bibliographers at Memorial Library. We tried a couple of times having arrangements with book dealers that would just ship us things from a country we were interested in that subject area, but it never really worked out very well. The one I remember us doing the longest was with the Philippines, but it was just difficult to explain what we were looking for and to have those dealers ferreting out these more hard-to-find materials. And frankly, when we had such a small budget that we really decided, you know, it was tilting it too much to deal with those kind of plans.
Was that last one sounds to me, and please debunk me if I'm wrong, sounds like a grab bag approach at a toy store. You know, you see a bag that says Africa, and it may.
What you do is you tell this big book dealer in the Philippines, we're interested in things about land reform and land tenure in the Philippines and, you know, from the government or private agencies. You know, it has to be in English. So you give them criteria. But even so, they would sort of, well, depending on how you look at it, not understand or sneak things in that they thought maybe we'd go for. It turned out to be as much work, if not more, as just going through pick lists or lists of available things and then choosing them and mailing them back. Well, that had its own challenges with the, you know, exchange rates and such.
Right. Any examples of a find or finds that through the scouring you ended up with something really unique and useful?
Well, you know, that's... it's so hard to say because we did find quite a few things from government agencies that, you know, didn't end up in any other library. And that's why when I mentioned before the National Shared Cataloging System, it's international now, of OCLC, even when we weren't using that for cataloging, we knew what things were in other libraries. And we had a consistent level of about half of what we got was not in any other U.S. academic library. So, and as I said, now those things might be findable online, but at the time they were not. So the reason we were the only small library in this Latin America project was because people knew we had unique things. We wouldn't add things that, well, we would, but I mean, we certainly tracked how much of our material was not found in other libraries. And we regularly had foreign researchers. Either they would come over breaks if they were at other universities or in other countries, or the students here on campus who would marvel that we had things produced by their government or in their institutions that they could not find at home in their libraries. So that was our real focus.
I want to backtrack briefly to the management question because there's a specific I want to ask about that.
And sure. That's,
do you feel, either at the time or upon reflection, that you that being a director of a one-person shop with these sort of part-time students mm-hmm. and part-time people coming in and out, do you feel that or I guess I should say, what sort of management style did this time period, what sort of things did you learn about your management style, or maybe try to unlearn about your management style?
Well, a lot of my management style under those circumstances was more a matter of training, you know. I mean, when you're working with somebody who's there 10 or 15 hours a week with, and you're not teaching them a job that they will have learned anywhere else in previous experience, a lot of it's developing training materials, you know, working one-on-one. I think I, you know, prioritizing what's more important. Obviously, you have to learn to trust the other people you're working with. I think one thing that I was privileged to be in the position of being here at Steenbach, because one thing I learned from watching them over the years, as well as the people I worked with, was the importance of, you know, each new person that comes in, you try to figure out what their strengths are, and then, you know, if that means rearranging some of the work so that they're doing things that they're most interested in and that play to their strengths. The biggest challenge of working under those circumstances, because the people in the library tech position usually actually stayed for several years. We only had maybe three over that time period. And when they left, it was generally, I think in each case, it was because they were leaving town. So the biggest challenge was almost, once I had training materials and I had to, you know, check people's work, and especially at first and all that sort of thing. The biggest challenge was just the sort of scheduling on the personal side, because you always had a lot of, you know, hire new people and train them in the fall, and then they would be gone over breaks, and then you know, in the summer, some might work extra, some might go away. This is standard for student employees. But I just found it really hard to find a time when I could ever go away that wasn't in the middle of either training or no one's there. It was fun. And it was very nice when I had the opportunity to work with library school students. That was, I always enjoyed that kind of mentoring role. And on the other hand, when we hired students who were in the development studies area, I could learn a lot from them as they had a different perspective on the literature. Mm-hmm. And we would discuss maybe where we could improve the way we're doing things in the library so that they as students could find things more easily. So mm-hmm. It was a nice interplay.
Were there either SLIS graduate students or these, you said it was a PhD program, right?
Right.
Any of those students end up working here and you end up building a relationship with them after the fact?
Sure. Some, like anything you go through, might last longer or shorter, but there was many of them I kept in touch with, and of course many of them, if they were in the development studies program, they had links with the Land Tenure Center that continued. So, and they weren't all those students. I mean, for instance, I developed you know, close relationships with graduate students who might have been in, say, environmental studies but had an interest in development work as well. So there were plenty of graduate students here who either went on to work with, I don't know, World Bank, Ford Foundation, their own governments at home, USAID, some of whom I'm still in contact with, yes.
Okay. So again, there might be some more I ask about that either later or in our final interview, but I want to talk, looking at your resume, during this time period, there appeared to be 3 points of travel. I think Mexico, Uganda, and South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you care to speak to any of those. If you do, if you want to speak to all of them, I just think it's interesting that your job at this time, still as director, allowed you to at least be able to, I'm guessing, be a part of specific projects and then go overseas or into Mexico to do some work.
Right. Well, the work in Mexico was when I was on leave. It wasn't Portland Tenure Center. But the projects in South Africa, Uganda, and there were probably some others that I didn't, you know, that weren't sort of large enough to make it onto the resume. As I said, this was part of the challenge because the way Land Tenure Center was being funded, the projects were essential. And when a project had a potential library component, they would involve me. Now, that might mean training here for people who would use the library, and that was one way that I might be involved. And in a few cases, it involved a kind of institution building in the partner institution where they either had or wished they had a library, and I would also do some work there. Again, sometimes the librarian might come here, and sometimes I might go there. Usually it was a combination. So the biggest challenge there was there were there were a couple ways in which this could be kind of problematic. One was they write up a big project with a library part, and then as the budget goes through, the part that gets cut out is the library part. So it was, as at some point, I sort of said, sure, write up anything you want. If it comes through, then I'll deal with it, to be completely honest. So that was kind of difficult at times just in terms of planning, you know. Well, was I really going to, you know, do this or not? How extensive was it going to be, et cetera? Of the other projects, I would say I worked on several through the years, and the two that I would consider most successful, even though I don't think the libraries are still in business that I helped work with, were the ones in Nicaragua and South Africa. And thinking about that, obviously those are also both places where there were major changes in the government and a lot of enthusiasm in the country for doing land-related activities and just sort of improving social justice and all those kind of things. But from my standpoint, the reason they were the most successful is those were projects where, in the first place, there was more better funded, but also that I was working with librarians who were well trained. Because the biggest, one of the challenges of being in the position I was in is that the people at Land Tenure Center were obviously not librarians. And so they appreciated what I was doing. They knew I had all of this good stuff. They would like to see it replicated in some other country. But if we were working in a place where the people working in the library and the partner institution didn't have adequate grounding in librarianship, and there wasn't sufficient investment in or political will or whatever to make the library part success, then it was put me in kind of a spot that was less likely to be successful. Whereas if we had a situation, as we did in both Nicaragua and South Africa, where not only did they really want to have, you know, library research resources, But they also had staff who were had the basic grant library training and could, and they were also integrated into the library community in their country. So, for instance, in South Africa, I worked not only with the people in the institution where they were trying to create a library, but with other librarians who could help make what I did fit into the local way of doing things. And so when it worked that way, it was a lot of fun and very worthwhile.
All right. Depending on how this goes, I think the rest of this time I want to talk about what you call in your resume library integration from 1994 to 1997, which I think means the LTC becoming part of the general library system.
Right, right.
So I think as with most of what we've been doing here, if you want to start by providing an overview and then we might probe a little deeper on some of your answers.
Well, you know, when I talked about doing the retrospective conversion and especially the 2 years of doing it at home with a what would now seem like prehistoric so-called laptop computer, you know, one reason I was doing that was obviously because I wanted them, you know, the information to be online. But the other reason, frankly, was that it was pretty clear that at some point the Land Tenure Center Library would probably not exist as separate as it had at the time. And my feeling was if I did a good job of weeding the collection so we had the right materials in it and had all of the records online, then if someone else took it over, it would be easier to keep things than to throw them away. Whereas if all of these things were sitting there in filing cabinets with nothing but a paper record, it would be easier to throw them away, and they probably wouldn't have the subject background to have any other criteria for making that decision. So that's part of why I did it, in the way I did anyway. So basically, there were all kinds of, you know, funding problems, and at some point, the decision was made that we were going to close the Land Tenure Center Library as a separate entity, and it was because of funding for staff. Now, the people at the other people at LTC had a slightly different take on this than I did. They were much more concerned about what will we do if we don't have all of these things in this room where they've always been. And I would have been very happy if we'd been able to do an integration and keep me working, for instance, through Steenbach. Moving the physical materials around didn't bother me at all. I figured if we have all of these filing cabinets on the fourth floor or the third floor, who cares? If we move the books into the Steenbach collection, there's still a different classification number, so they're still going to be together. So you're not going to lose the ability to browse. But in the end, what was involved was a lot of discussions with librarians in the GLS, specifically the area studies bibliographers, and also with the law library to decide where our materials would best be housed. So those that had a relationship to agriculture and rural development, natural resources, stayed at Steenbach, which was probably most of them. Some that were more kind of general economic or rural, just general economic development ended up at Memorial Library, and a few things ended up at the Law Library. the files, the things in those filing cabinets, stayed at Steenbach and just moved to a different location. And we also did quite a lot of eliminating duplicates. You know, once we had an online catalog, there was less, you know, we just would keep, if the book was already at Memorial Library and that was the logical place for it, then we would withdraw our copy, and that was hard. That, I think that's something that's also harder for non-librarians than it is for librarians to see happening. But we did have an online catalog and book delivery across campus by then, so that wasn't so bad. Still, the day, when the day came and I just locked the doors and went to an office in another building, it was difficult. And then actually the Steenbach staff went through the book collection, and I ended up coming back because I realized that what had happened is if they found multiple copies of a book, they had planned to withdraw all but one, whereas I knew that in some cases we might have three copies, but there might only be four in the whole country. So we did a little backtracking on that part and adding some things back in.
So those were, just to reiterate there, those were situations where, because of your knowledge, you knew that if he went down to one book, there would be only one book,
right,
at least cataloged.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In a library.
And absolutely, and that's a good point. You know, easily findable by people, whether they're in that location or somewhere else, which is the whole idea of an online catalog. And again, here we're talking about the book collection, not the smaller documents, but the things that were actually large enough to sit on shelves like other books.
Right.
But they were still, many of them were either government, you know, were government documents, you know, some from other countries where there might be plenty of copies in Europe or Latin America, but not in the United States. So.
Okay. Were you satisfied with the result?
Well, it was just, I was certainly satisfied with the process. I think we all worked very well together, and it was handled well. And we had done a lot of work leading up to it in terms of you know, documenting and having policies and having good catalog records and all of that. It was... The biggest challenge when I first moved to being at the Land Tenure Center, we still had the acquisitions budget. We still had exchange programs. So what we were doing at that point was I was still responsible for building the collection and for doing cataloging of things that were unique, and that part of it was less satisfactory only because we had a smaller staff, and therefore the breadth of the collection just had to be less. So we did continue to, I did also at that point still have some student hourly help, even though I was in the other buildings. I was still the librarian for Land Tenure, and which hence the odd title I gave myself. But we had to really focus on things that were more specifically either places where Land Tenure Center was working or just Land Tenure land reform. And up until that time, we had done more, I would say, with natural resource tenure, rural development issues. It was a little broader before then, and we had to scale back.
Mm-hmm. You said you locked the door and you moved to another location. So first off, and I think we may have got this on the first recording. Mm-hmm. I don't remember whether it was the first recording or the first meeting, but when you did lock the door and move to another location, where was that other location?
Okay, well, I moved into offices at the Lynn Tenure Center, which at that time was on the corner of University and Randall in the old Rennebaum's building, which is no longer there. That's where Lynn Tenure Center had their offices, and I actually had, for some time, made a point of having sort of office hours there every week anyway. I went over one or two mornings a week, and I usually just did selection, you know, went through those bibliographies and chose things, but it helped me work more closely with the people in LTC day-to-day, not just on projects. So they found me an office there, and that's where I went. It was odd because to them, I had worked with them for years. They knew me. It was no big deal. Now she's going to be here. The library closing was not a surprise. But for me, I was closing down something I had worked with for 18 years. I went over there into the office they left for me, and there were like somebody's dirty dishes on the desk from whoever had been in the office before. So, you know, I think I shut the door and cried for a while and then got over it and moved on.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the, you know, in sitcoms and dramas when they do the, sort of the final episode and the doors close, there's always this sort of melancholy or sort of poignancy.
Yeah, right.
It sounds like there was a bit of poignancy there, if not when you locked the door, but at least when you went to your new place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and as often happened with them, they were probably in the middle of writing some grant and, you know, they didn't have time for the sitcom group hug.
So you gave yourself the title in
well,
your...
I mean, my title was Special Librarian. That was my title.
So your official title was Special Librarian.
Right, absolutely.
In your resume, it says Coordinator...
My official title was Special Librarian for the whole time. So in terms of a resume, it basically, at the time when we all changed from being specialist to Special Librarian, the university actually made a big deal out of the fact that there was a difference between a, you know, your official title in the title structure and your working title, which is what you actually did. So anything I've put here, you know, I probably ran it by my boss and they said sure, but I had different bosses at different times, but it's a working description of what I was doing.
All right. So a few more minutes here. So you talked initially about the immediate transition into that new office,
right.
But what about the... you know, the early days or early weeks or maybe months of transition between being here at Steenbach in a library and being at LTC as a librarian without a library. And it's not that you didn't have, you still had a library.
Right. No, I completely understand. It's hard for me to remember exactly how the changes happened as I was at, changed where I physically was. I still, as I said, I still did ordering and cataloging and worked with students. They were just in the office with me. I was more able to work with the Lynn Tenure Center staff per se because I was there, which was nice. I really missed the regular contact with the graduate students, either from that program or others who I had just sort of seen every day. I mean, to me, that was the Steenbach staff also, but them I managed to see socially. But I did feel, you know, sorry that I didn't have as much of a chance to relate to the graduate student researchers as I had before, although to some extent I still did, of course. One thing that we did right away when I changed is that I began to work on something I had suggested before, but it hadn't been feasible, which was to get Land Tenure Center publications to be issued in digital as well as paper form, and to make a deal with the people in University of Minnesota who do the there's an AgEcon site as part of Agricultural Network Information Centers, AgNIC, to get our Land Tenure Center's publications housed there. I think that was the first time LTC had a website, although I didn't do the initial creation, but I sort of worked with the associate director, Steve Smith, in creating a website which we'd been needing, and then I was responsible for the parts relating to library services and publications, and then later I took over the website. Another thing I did, I started creating, we had done paper library acquisitions lists at times or bibliographies of our collection in certain geographic areas. So instead of that, I started issuing acquisitions lists online also and distributing them by email server list.
So it sounds like, as with your transition to director in 85, your transition to coordinator also had a digital,
absolutely,
a digital or online,
yeah, right.
component, electronic component, right. I guess would be a way to say it.
Well, it's primarily that being a librarian over this time period, there were always electronic things going on, and and I always looked at any kind of technology as a tool, and so if I could find, I wasn't somebody that just wanted to go out and learn to, to do HTML code just for the heck of it, but if there is a way to achieve the goals of making information available more efficiently with technology, which obviously is what there is, then I was always interested in doing that. One of the biggest problems, actually, with a one-person library or probably with a 30-person library is always that you can come up with so many more ideas of ways to improve services than you have the ability to do. So just because it's one person doesn't mean you don't still look for the most efficient way to reach your goals.
Sure. My last question for today, and then I'll let you, if you have anything on your mind you want to discuss. So you were at the, except for a couple of brief hiatuses, you were at the Land Tenure Center Library from the late 70s to 1996, the actual physical library.
Right.
Is there a way for you to characterize the importance of that library, since it's obviously no longer here?
Okay. I would say that library was very much a special library in the real sense. The first, even when I was an undergraduate and before I went to library school, I had worked in special libraries on campus, and I just love that. I love the opportunity to do the library thing and also develop some expertise in a subject area. So that was always very appealing to me. And I always felt like the Land Tenure Center Library, we had, people would get confused, what's the difference between the library and the things that Land Tenure Center publishes? Well, the difference is they publish, maybe 20 things a year, and we would add maybe 1,500 things to the library. So we were really focusing on things that we thought people that weren't being collected anywhere else and developing a subject expertise. I think the importance of the library, especially in a time before the internet and when research was done differently, was we were really developing the collection and the index to that collection. And I always felt that the value really was that researchers, whether they were people affiliated with the university, graduate students who came here temporarily, government employees or NGO employees from other countries, was that we provided a place where they could come and not only learn from the researchers here and from the expertise of our faculty and researchers, but they could learn from each other. They could, you know, a researcher could come from Zimbabwe and learn from the experience of someone in Latin America. And there wasn't really any other way to do that because we collected those materials over time. So for me, that was the real importance, was sharing information across countries, across disciplines, in an area that was important to a lot of people's lives on the ground.
Okay. And as with last time, we try to leave you with the last word. So is there anything, knowing that we're coming back one more time, but is there anything on your mind that you feel might be best to get it off in case we don't get it on the record next time?
I don't really think of anything right now. Okay. I think it was a great experience, and those years were really important transitional ones, and the real value of it was doing something that nobody else was doing that was, you know, that other people found valuable. So.
Well, Bev, I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.